Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Now available on Apple Podcasts, Podcast One, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen, and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free, and things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country, and there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
Hello and welcome. You're tuned into the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, along with me, Tim Dennis. Tim, it's Saturday.
Yes.
That can only mean one possible thing.
Supernatural news, Dave?
Supernatural news and Parashare. But today we're going to forego the supernatural news aspect of the program.
Right.
Because we have a Parashare so big that it's going to take over the entire episode. Oh, how about that?
I like it.
It's a little different, but we're gonna do this tomorrow. Bill Burns joins us. He was with us on True Crime Tuesday, and we had a fascinating talk. But he's back for the supernatural element as we talk about Tesla and Edison in their final competition to try to communicate to the other side. It's a fascinating listen. I think you guys are going to enjoy it. Bill's a great storyteller, and we're going to delve into different parts of history for both Tesla and Edison that you may not be familiar with, or at least not to the extent to which Bill is able to share with us. So that's tomorrow on the Best in Paranormal Talk Radio. Before we get started with our guest, Tim, I do have to tell you, I had a very, very weird experience. And I'm hoping, I'm trying to get together with Chris Fleming here soon to talk about it, and maybe even have him on our show next Saturday to discuss this this weird thing that happened.
Okay.
Here's my side of the story. So it was a dream. There's no doubt to me it was a dream.
All right.
And I was filming the Holzer files.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But what's weird is it was very vivid, like the visitation dream I had with my grandfather.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And there were all these faces that were recognizable to me, and I mean, it made sense that they were there, but it didn't make sense, if that makes sense to you.
Yeah.
And as this is going along, I'm kind of having this, I don't know how else to explain it, other than I feel like I'm starting to suffer a stroke.
Weird.
Okay. Part of me just keeps like drooping, and I feel like I'm fighting to stay conscious through this. And I'm like, I don't know, something's wrong. Something's really wrong. And they're like, we know, just hold tight. And I'm like, well, I need help. I need some help. And they're like, we're trying to get somebody. Just wait with us, Dave. And I'm like, okay. And I start looking, and I'm like, oh my God, what are these? Who are these people, and why are they here? Right. Because mm-hmm. I'm starting to recognize them, and they're dead celebrities.
Really?
Okay. Now, and not even like major dead celebrities. I mean, we're talking B and C level dead celebrities, but it was very strange. And I'm sure that if their spirits just heard that, they'll never visit me again. But it wasn't like I was talking to Elvis in Maryland, right?
Right. Yeah.
It was like Richard Deacon, who played Mel Cooley on the Dick Van Dyke Show. That was one of the guys. So it's really strange, but like they were there because they all had something to do with TV. And I wasn't, you know, but in these moments where I'm feeling like I'm kind of falling apart, I go, who are you bringing to help me? And they're like, we're trying to connect with him now. Just be patient. And then they go, I think we've got him. And Chris Fleming steps out.
Weird.
And I go, Chris, I need your help. He goes, I know, buddy. That's why I'm here. Just relax. And I start looking around, and I go, Chris, I don't know what's happening to me. Am I dying right now? And he kind of gets this perplexed look on his face, like, it's not what you think it is, but yes. And I'm like, Chris, you know, help me with this. And he goes, hold on, I've got somebody else who's coming to help me. And my mom walks in. Now, I've not had a visitation dream with my mom at this point.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Period. I've seen her in the background. I've seen her, but she's never really communicated. And I remember as she steps in, I held my hands up and I said, shut up, everybody, shut up. And then I'm waiting and my mom talks and it's her voice.
Okay.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, Mom, what's happening? What is going on? And I said, and I remember specifically just saying at that moment, I go, holy shit, am I dead? Am I dying right now? And my mom kind of goes, honey, you just need to relax. Everything's going to be fine. We're going to get you back. Everything's going to be fine. We're here with you. Everything's going to be okay. And Chris is like, buddy, you just got to follow my voice and keep coming with me. And I'm like, what are you talking about, Chris? Follow it where? And he goes, close your eyes. I'm like, dude, I don't want to close my eyes. I think I'm dying. And he goes, it's going to be okay. And I said, no, if my mom's here, I want to be here. And he goes, just trust me, please, Dave, trust me. So I just kind of, I'm like struggling. My mom's there. She holds my hand and I just kind of list to the side. And I'm shortening this. This is like, it felt like it lasted for like an hour, right?
Okay.
I close my eyes as I'm holding my mom and all of a sudden, boom, I come right awake in my bed at home.
Wow.
And I've tried to connect with Chris and we're both on weird schedules. So we just keep missing each other. But I want to know, did I appear in his dream?
Right.
Because it's weird that these spirits kept saying, we're trying to connect with somebody to help you. Be patient. We're trying. And then that's who they bring through. So it's very strange. So I don't know if I was experiencing like a death, an alternate reality, a parallel universe. Was I on the other side and I wasn't supposed to be there? And that's why, you know, part of me was being sucked back. I don't know what the hell any of that meant. But that, I got to tell you, dude, it is crystal clear in my mind, like my grandfather's visitation. And whereas it still feels disjointed and weird that there was, you know, people from TV, you know, of long ago that were there surrounding me, it's so strange. I don't know else to explain what happened.
Can I throw an alternate theory at you?
Yeah.
Almost like you're astral traveling as you're sleeping and you almost become disconnected from that silver cord. You
yes.
know, and yep, you needed sense, yeah. someone, and Chris is one who's got that experience with astral traveling as he's dreaming, and maybe he's the person who needed to get you back into your body, and he's
yeah, I don't know,
you know,
it was just him walking me through it. Dave, you just have to relax, close your eyes, just follow me through, and I'm like, follow you through to where? And it was just so unnerving.
Yeah, and I don't know, maybe and maybe the. This is going to seem weird, and again, I'm spitballing here, but maybe those familiar faces are guardians of sorts that took familiar guises so you wouldn't freak out, you know?
Mel Cooley?
Yeah, I know it seems weird.
Freddie Prinze looking like he did, and Cheech and, what was it, not Cheech and the Man, Chico and the Man?
Chico and the Man, yeah,
there
right?
were some weird people in this dream
right,
that but, were there, like they were there watching over. It was weird.
But I'm thinking because Chris does have all that experience with astral yeah. travel and whatnot, that he's the guy who could get you back into your body. I don't know. Well, again, he's the guy crap. Who could tell you.
And what show did he star on?
Who, Chris Fleming?
Yeah.
Well,
think
he's
far back. How did we get introduced to Chris? What was the name of the show he was a part of?
What was the name of his show? It was, my mind's blanking.
Dead Famous.
Dead Famous. Yeah. Yeah.
How weird stuff.
Yeah.
I love it though. Hey, if any of you have had bizarre dreams like that, where you feel like I said, dude, I felt like it was a stroke, but I also felt like I was like melting. Like part of me, you know, like I was not supposed to be where I was. And I was not fading away, but like literally melting. Like that's why I thought it was a stroke, because I just felt like I was drooping and melting. It was so bizarre. But if anybody else has had experience with this or understands it or thinks they do, I'm always open to hear your concepts of these stories. So email me, dave@darknessradio.com. We'll be back next week, of course, with a full supernatural news and parashare. No, what I just shared wasn't the parashare we're going to talk about all day, Tim.
Okay.
Not at all. I've got guests that are joining us now to talk about it, but I wanted to start off, since it's a parashare program, give you something very strange that just recently happened to me. So that's what we'll discuss. I do want to make a quick mention again before we leave, or before we launch into the guest. This coming Thursday is the third out of four specials that I filmed for Travel Channel. I'll be joined by the Kindred Spirits crew. Amy Barry, Amy Bruni, Adam Barry, Chip Coffee, will be my guests, and we're going to discuss a very impactful episode of Kindred Spirits and break it down. That's this Thursday, and that'll be taking place on Travel Channel. Then the following week, I will be joined by the Ghost Brothers, and we're going to have some fun, laughs, scares, and everything. So I hope that you guys will keep checking these out. Those are the four specials. We did the one for Holzer Files last week, Destination Fear. This week will be the Kindred Spirits special, and then the week after, Ghost Brothers. So please check them out. And if you like these specials, make sure that you contact Travel Channel. Let them know that you want more. Hopefully we can do more episodes. And I am out in the field filming season two of the Holzer Files. Everything is good. We're being safe, having a great time, and I cannot wait to share the kind of weird stuff that we've been capturing this season, Tim. A couple of really strong, powerful episodes are going to be coming out this season. That's all I can say.
Very cool.
So exciting times. Speaking of exciting times, I get a message, Tim, through the Insty. My kids hate it when I call it that.
it's the gram.
I'm trying to figure out how to, hip up my conversation. I'm like, oh yeah, Dad's on the Insty now. And they're like, on the what? On the Insty, Instagram. And they're like, Dad, first of all, it's Instagram.
Yeah.
And nobody calls it the Insty.
Right.
But you. And I'm like, perfect. I'm a trendsetter. Let's call it the Insty. Anyway, I get a message on the Insty. Mm-hmm. And this message says, hi, my name's Rihanna. Me and my dad have been listening to your show for years. Even when Snallygaster made some surprise visits. He owns a house in Mechanicsville, Virginia, called The Cabin on 360. It has a lot of paranormal activity. He's been wanting to come on your show and talk about it for the longest time. I've gone on investigations with him there, and it is a powerhouse for the paranormal. He has plenty of stories, enough to talk about for hours, and he'd love to share them with you. He's emailed you before, but I don't think you saw it, which I totally understand because I'm sure you get thousands of emails. So first of all, let me say right there, thank you, Rihanna, for understanding that. We do get them. I don't always see every email. I try to answer everything I possibly can, or I put you into a file to contact later as a guest. But this stood out to me. I love the fact that it's a family affair. She says, thank you for listening and considering us. And then she gives me the link to the page that they have on Facebook, which you'll find on today's program as well. I said, sure, we'd love to have you on. Do you think you and your dad could join us? And she said, sure. We also have a friend who's had crazy experiences there. So we're joined by all three of them on today's program. First up, we have Ryan and Rihanna Jones. And Ryan, you are the owner of this house. Is that right?
Yeah, my family owns a property.
Very cool. And Rihanna, you're the one that reached out to us. Thank you for doing that.
No problem. Thank you for listening.
And we'll introduce Dennis Eslock in a few moments, but I want to kind of get a little bit of your backstory and how you came upon this place. Was this a family home, Ryan, or talk us through the history of it?
Well, my grandfather owned the property, and there were two houses on the property, the brick house, and then he built the log cabin on the property like in the early 80s. So we never actually lived here. The brick house did have a family in it for a while, but then something happened, which I'll get into later, that made it so they zoned the house for business. So both these houses have never, well, the cabin has never been lived in, but both these houses are now zoned for business.
All right. And were these places always supernaturally charged?
You see, we just started investigating these houses in 2016. That's when Dennis and I started coming out here. I had joined a team here in Richmond called All Seeing Paranormal Society back in 2013. And I knew we had this empty house, the Brick Rancher, where, I'll just go ahead and say, there was a murder that happened back in October of 1979 in the Brick House. A young man by the name of, I don't want to get all names, but the young man raped and murdered his 12-year-old sister.
Oh, God.
And the same day, yeah, it's awful. My grandfather had sent some workers to go gather straw behind the brick house. So they come upon, this is like 10 o'clock in the morning. They come upon this refrigerator box. They go to move it, and they realize, oh, there's something in here. So they open up the box, and they find this young lady with two guns, partially robed with two gunshot wounds to the chest. And the police said that it looks like she had been raped by her older brother. So the workers, who were of African-American descent, they called my dad, and he was the only one in the office. So he came. This is October 97. I guess they used a radio or whatever, called my dad. And back then, Mechanicsville was way out in the country. I mean, it's like leave your doors unlocked type of situation, like Mayberry almost. This stuff didn't happen. So he called my dad. They called my dad up. He comes to the crime scene, meets the cops out there, and he said he helped move the body into the body bag. He said the workers were very dark skinned, and he said they were so scared they looked white. That's how scared they were. And so years go by, and we're sitting at the dinner table. We're about probably Rihanna's age, maybe a little bit younger, maybe 15. And he tells me the story about what happened, and it got my curiosity up. I wonder if there's anything out there. So fast forward a few years, and I'm part of this team, and I asked the people at the office if we can go out there and use it as a training, you know, center, you know, for our team, because I had no idea if there was paranormal activity or not. I just knew something had happened out there. I'm like, well, you know, if you get something, that's great. If not, it's cool. You can teach them how to do a proper EVP session or something. At least have a place where we could practice the right way to do things. So the first night we have this training session. I have to leave early because I have the family dinner I have to go to. So it's my friend Hallie Odell. He's the leader of the group. And a few other people. I don't remember all their names, but they were doing a investigation of the brick house. Again, not knowing if there's anything in there or not. He messaged me that night. He was like, yeah, we had to get out of there after an hour. Their lead, like medium, got scratched. One of the investigators burst out crying. He said that the walls looked like they were bleeding. He said that he had never seen anything like that
ever. What?
Yeah. And I was kind of like, well, since I wasn't there, I mean, I believed him, but it was like one of those things where it's like you kind of want to see it for yourself.
Yeah, it is. And he was like, holy cow.
Yeah. He was like, I'll never go in that house again. And he's been on investigations, he's plenty of years of experience. So this wasn't his first rodeo. So, fast forward like maybe like a 2 years or a year and a half later, I'm finally able to get back into the house, and I bring Dennis with me. Dennis and I had been hanging out, and we've been on a few investigations together. We've been to St. Albans Sanatorium, and we've been to, you know, Edgewood Plantation on Route 5 and Henricus Park in Chester. So we trusted each other. So I brought him in. First thing he said when he walked into the front door of the brick rancher was, there's something in this house that's not human and never was. And he's got medium abilities as well.
Well, let's introduce Dennis now to the program. Dennis Etzlock joining us as well. Dennis, thank you for being here.
Hey, my pleasure. Thanks for having us on.
Now, Dennis, you walk into this place. Talk to me about that first impression and what it felt like to you.
I mean, walking into an empty structure that, you know, it looks like just this common little brick home that somebody would live in and have a joyous little family life. But the instant I walked in that front door, I guess Ryan and I were probably 3-4 steps in, and I just felt like this negative energy just, you know, that feeling where you just don't belong somewhere? That was what overwhelmed me. And, you know, I like Ryan alluded to, we've done investigations in numerous places. And just the energy there, I knew was not a human energy. I knew it wasn't normal. It just, I mean, just walking in the door, the hair on the back of my neck stood up. And I knew something was wrong at that point.
And had you ever felt a presence that strong and that dark before?
Not that dark, no. I mean, I've had strong energies approach me, and I've been in locations where, so Ryan will tell you, the most common, I don't know if this is good or bad, but the most common response I get to EVPs when I'm conducting them is the F-bomb thrown at me.
Every time.
I don't know why. Yeah, it's become the running joke that, oh my God, did you get an F-bomb at you on this investigation? Yeah, yeah. So, you know, and I have hundreds of investigations under my belt in numerous, numerous locations. But the energy there was something totally different from anything I had felt before, even when I have aggressive energies come at me.
And you felt that this was definitely not human in nature. It was never human, never like it, just a pissed off ghost that's gotten angry over the years?
No, this wasn't just the cantankerous old man. This was something that I had never encountered, an energy that made me feel that way. I have since, you know, Ryan mentioned St. Albans Sanatorium, and, you know, there's rumor and everything there about the creeper, and, you know, it's this dark, malevolent energy. I've since encountered it, so I knew what I was encountering then. But that first step into the Brick Rancher, the first visit there, that was the first time I had encountered that feeling from an energy before.
Now you're in this place, Ryan and Dennis, to investigate. And Ryan, Dennis lays this heavy load on your shoulders that this is something dark and evil. How does that, you know, affect the way that you're about to investigate this place?
Well, I mean, I wanted more like evidence of that, I guess. I wanted to see what was in there. I actually got my curiosity more. So we ended up walking around the house. We go downstairs, walk downstairs to the basement of the house, and we're sitting there talking, and all of a sudden we both hear distinctly, a young girl scream.
But you heard this out loud.
Out loud. And we were like, what the F was that? Literally, that's literally what we said, because we never hear that. You know, it's usually on EVP or recorder. And it was so distinct. It was so loud. It was like, you know, almost like welcome to the brick house type of thing. Like, this is what you're getting yourself into.
You are now in this. You hear this girl scream. I mean, how do you keep yourself collected to stay in and continue an investigation when most people would dip out and be like, "Yep, that's enough. I'm done."
Well, I mean, honestly, if I was by myself, I'd probably, you know, scream like a girl and run. But since I had Dennis with me, it helped me, you know, man up a little bit. And we ended up walking around the house looking to see if there's actually anybody in there. But the house was locked before, so I don't know how there would be anybody in there. Of course, there wasn't. And there wasn't anybody outside to make that noise. So I don't know.
All right.
And
now,
like first weird things.
Yeah, and that's quite a bit of weird things. Let's take a quick break.
Hey, hey, hey. This is NFL Hall of Famer Ray Lewis. I'm excited to announce the launch of my new podcast, everyday greatness. The Ray Lewis Podcast. I'll be talking with friends, family members, old teammates, athletes, celebrities, moguls. And guess what? I'll be talking to you. Listen, this is all in the search for everyday greatness. So I'm asking you to come along with me on this ride. Download new episodes of Everyday Greatness, the Ray Lewis Podcast, every Friday on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and on podcastone.com. It's not what you have, it's what's inside of you that actually inspires greatness.
The Cabin on Route 360, Mechanicsville, Pennsylvania. That's our topic today in a full-blown Parashare story of epic proportions. Ryan and Rihanna Jones are here with us, along with their friend Dennis Estlock, talking about their experience in this home. Now, Dennis, you are sensitive. Have you ever heard direct voice phenomena before, like a disembodied scream?
Several times. It was disconcerting, to say the least. And I'm sorry, but I got to correct you, Dave. It's in Mechanicsville, Virginia, not Pennsylvania.
Virginia. I'm sorry. I know that, and I keep saying the wrong deal, so I apologize. Virginia. Okay. I've got that rewritten on my sheet here, so I hopefully will not stumble on that moment again. But is there a distinct difference? I mean, when you hear voices, Dennis, how do you know, unless you have somebody there like Ryan who's also hearing it, how do you know that it's a direct voice phenomenon as opposed to just a psychic imprint that you're picking up on?
Well, if it were a psychic imprint, it would have been one where I didn't. There's a huge difference in how you hear with your ears and hear with abilities. With abilities, you hear it in your mind. With audible or AVPs, an audible voice phenomenon, you hear it with your ears. So, you know, if you say in your own head, I need milk, bread, and eggs at the grocery, you know that's inside your own head. You don't hear it with your ears. But if somebody sitting beside you or in the next room says that same thing, you can tell the difference. And I mean, it was definitely in the house. The echo that went through the house was discernible. I don't know how else to explain it other than we know it generated inside the house. And
do you believe that this was an intelligent haunting, or were you catching an echo of the past?
That's a good question. At this point, it's been nearly 5 years, so I don't recall what my first impression was. I recall, like Ryan said, our first statement, we kind of looked at each other with that dumbfounded look and went, what the F was that? And then it occurred to us what actually transpired. We had just heard an audible scream within the house. Whether it was intelligent, I would assume to be within the basis of an intelligent haunt, it would be in reaction to something that we're doing at that moment. So I'm of the impression that this one was actually more of a residual, because it didn't play out to anything that we were doing. We were just in the basement looking around, trying to pick up on different energy and see what we felt. And then this scream generated. And I can't even tell you, it came from everywhere but nowhere, if that makes sense to you. It just was. Like a normal noise, if you drop something in a room, you can go, that came from that corner of the room. Or if somebody drops something upstairs, you can go, that sounded like it came from, you know, Randy's room. Or this just came from everywhere.
I can't even imagine what that must have been like. And you said you heard it from everywhere, but nowhere discernible. Did the two of you set out to try to discover where, if there was somebody there, what it was that you were hearing? What happened next?
Well, once we kind of gather our senses back up, it took us a good minute or so to kind of rationalize what we had heard. And then, of course, the two of us set off throughout the house to make sure it's empty. We went out and walked the property. There's a neighbor that's about a tenth of a mile down that has small children. We didn't hear them outside. And you know, this wasn't a scream of children playing and laughing and having a great time. This was a scream of just sheer terror. And I think the tone and the intonement of that scream is what stuck with us the most.
From your psychic impressions, was that the girl that had been murdered there, or were you hearing something else?
If I were to have to put it, not just from my abilities, but from experience in this field, I would say that was a moment in time just prior to her actually being murdered. I think that energy stored in that structure and the fiber of that building, and for whatever reason, released at that moment. I truly think it was a playback of that morning that she was murdered.
Ryan, you're a dad. Rihanna on the show with us today. When you hear that scream, I mean, it becomes more than just a story at that point. You're actually kind of a witness to history when that takes place. How did that affect and impact you?
Well, I mean, it definitely made me think. But during that time, it happened so fast. It's like you don't really have time to, soak it in, because we were really just trying to figure out where the scream came from. And we didn't know the story of this young lady who was murdered. It was just a story to me. I didn't have a connection to her like I feel I do now. I didn't know how old she was. I didn't know anything about it. To me, it was just something that happened in the late 70s. You know, I felt bad for it, but, you know, if it happened now, my reaction would be a lot different than it was.
How do you feel it would be different today?
Because we've done more research on her. We know who she was. We have a picture of her. We've talked to her friends. We've talked to people who've known her. We talked to some of her classmates who went to the same school. She went to school like maybe a quarter mile down the road. You could see her house from the school. And her classmates were telling us how they could see the police tape around her house, and when she didn't come to school that day, and how they felt. And I think we all feel a more of a connection to her than we ever thought we would.
Did that ever make you hesitant to bring your daughter into an investigation in that spot, knowing that spirit or that psychic scar was so strong there?
When we first started investigating, we did not know how strong the entity was in there. And I brought Rihanna in there maybe three times in total of hundreds of investigations. We don't allow anyone under the age of, I think, 18 in the house, in the brick house, because of what's in there.
Is that because you're afraid that it can negatively impact or affect them, or that it may follow them? What exactly is your concern?
It has negatively affected people. We've had seasoned investigators that have been investigating for 20 some years, probably more than that, come out of the brick house, fall on their knees, and start crying because of what the entity had done with their mind, with their head. He messes with your head. We had an investigator who's been doing this for probably 20 to 25 years. He went in there into the, where we think, well, Melissa's, her name is Melissa. He went into her room with his family and another couple people, and all of his equipment started messing up. And he's getting more frustrated and frustrated. He had SLS cameras, and the batteries kept draining, and the more his family or his daughter and his wife said, don't worry about it, this stuff happens all the time, the more pissed off he got. And he got to the point where one of the investigators approached him. He was like, you know, I have this might sound weird, but I've got this strange sensation to point at you and go, ha, ha, ha. And he said he just lost it, ran out the house. I'm actually sitting in the log cabin. He comes bursting through the door looking for Dennis. I'm like, well, he's out in the woods investigating. He slams the door, runs out looking for him. I catch up with him. He's like, I need to find Dennis. So I run into the woods. It's raining now. I run into the woods. I find Dennis. He comes back. This guy, he was, you know, he's a big guy. Sorry, motorcycle just went by. He's a big guy. He falls to his knees and starts crying. He's like, I've never wanted to punch my wife and daughter in the face, but when I just felt this need, I really literally wanted to kill them.
Good God.
And yeah. And Dennis has had something happen to him.
First of all, out there. Not just walk past that. How do you shake that feeling? How do you get past that when something has enraged you that much? Do you walk around then with that fear that something might set you off, that you might try to hurt somebody?
Well, what I ended up. I ran and got.
Well, Ryan, let Ryan answer that, and then Dennis will have you jump in. But go ahead, Ryan, since it was affecting you so greatly.
I knew Dennis would, because Dennis is good at grounding people and bringing people back down to, you know, to where they're normal. So I went and got him, and he sat there and he talked with the guy, and he brought him back to where he was where he could talk and, you know, sort things out and stuff.
And all right, Dennis, you know this is affecting your friend in such a negative, horrific way. What is your friend's not as open as you are. Does this worry you that something could affect you or you know, influence you in a bad way?
I had already battled pretty much that same scenario. Like Ryan said, I had already had something happen to me and it affected me. So I had a really good grasp at this point, or I believed I did, as to how to go back at it. So like Ryan said, this gentleman was on his knees in the rain, literally just bawling uncontrollably. So I had him ground himself. Just, you know, basically you're asking your spirit guides and you're asking the saints to step in, take the negative energy away, fill you with just positive and the light of God, and bring yourself back to where you should be and not under this dark depression. I don't want to say that it's a, I don't want to say that it was like a demonic possession and I don't have to do a full exorcism. I just need to get that person to fight back against that dark energy that's trying to take over their thoughts. And with positive energy and grounding, you're able to do that a lot of times.
Rihanna, talk to me about your experience and going into a place that has such a dark history and past. What was it like for you?
When I first went to like the brick cabin, I didn't know much about it. Like, as they said, they started investigating there in 2016. So I was about 12. If this is Eric's Saturday, I turned 17 today. So,
well, happy birthday from the video.
Thank you.
Certainly.
But I didn't know much about it at first. Walking in there, I could tell something was up, but it didn't have too much of an effect on me because I didn't really know much about it. I just knew that, like, my dad was investigating it and stuff. Because I've been to plenty in investigations and stuff with him, so it wasn't really anything out of the ordinary for me. But once I started, like, coming to investigations with him more, the more stuff started happening. Like, just doors slamming in your face, I can hear kids laughing in the woods clear as day one time, not even on EVP, just around me. Those are some of my favorite things that have happened.
Yeah.
Have you ever felt like at any point you were in danger or that something dark was stalking you there, Rihanna?
No, they're pretty, usually I stay in the log cabin, but when I'm in the brick house, I get more of an anxious feeling.
Leaving these places, and obviously being attuned to them, do you ever feel that the energy stays with you for a while, even after you leave the cabin or the house?
Yes, sometimes. It depends on the kind of investigations that were going on when you're there. If more stuff happens, then usually the feeling kind of follows me around. Or sometimes I'll be here and my head start hurting or my stomach will start hurting. I just won't feel right. And sometimes it'll happen like the night after when I go home or the day after. It'll kind of just stay with me for a little bit.
Well, Ryan, walk me through some more of the strange experiences that you and your family have had there.
Well, I mean, it really runs the gamut as far as, like, we've had hundreds of EVPs called out here. See, it's more the history of the land, which Dennis is better at talking about than I am. He has all the statistics and stuff, but it's more than just what happened in the brick house. The land itself is actually part of a Civil War battlefield. So we have that going for us as well. I've captured countless number of EVPs in both structures. And we've, like you said, one time we were in the brick house, and it was myself, Dennis, and a friend of ours. And I decided to go outside to get something out of my car. And I went, the door was locked. The deadbolt was actually locked. And I look at Dennis and, why'd you lock the deadbolt? He's like, I didn't lock the deadbolt. Why would it do that? The spirit had actually locked us in the house.
It locked you in the house?
Yes. It locked the deadbolt.
When you have an experience like that, then obviously it wants you there for a reason. How did it show itself for the rest of that investigation?
Well, we got some pretty good, we got some pretty good EVPs. I don't exactly remember which ones we got, but it definitely felt weird the rest of the night.
Well, yeah, I would guess it would feel weird. But how do you discern then? I mean, that's kind of an unnerving moment, knowing that they're locking you in. How do you separate it from being like a truly weird night, or just being unnerved because of what just happened?
Well, I think that when it happened, we thought it was cool, actually. When it was like, man, you're like locking us in. I wasn't really scared. It was more like, holy crap, they just knocked us in the house. Oh, my God. Probably the wrong way to look at it. But I wasn't scared when it happened. Again, if I was by myself and the ghost spirits locked me in, I would probably be more concerned. But I was like, oh, this is actually pretty cool. So we wanted evidence. That's what we were looking for. We wanted stuff to happen. Because, at the time we wanted to use the brick house as almost like a paranormal laboratory, ways to try out new techniques and stuff like that. And so when we got locked in the house, we were like, oh, this is actually pretty cool. It was a cool personal experience, nothing that we can actually use as evidence, because we can't prove that the door was locked other than taking a picture of it. But then we can take a picture of a locked door anytime,
Did you together ever decide, to try to help the spirits cross over? Was that what they seemed to be requesting? Or do you feel, like I said, this is more of an echo that you're capturing as opposed to their spirits really still residing there?
Well, Dennis has to answer this one.
One, we can't learn from that side if we send them away. It's kind of like trying to learn from books if you don't have books. So we have not tried to cross them over. We have, you know, both intelligent and residual responses. I mean, we have numerous accounts and EVPs of musket fire, cannon fire, and intelligent responses to direct questions. So we know there are energies there. And like I said, if we get rid of them or make an attempt to cross them over, we don't have that ability to learn from them anymore. You know, at the beginning of your intro and everything, you talked about Chris Fleming. And I'll tell you, when you have him on your show, ask him about his NDE, because it was one of the most moving and fascinating stories I've heard yet about an NDE. And that's, you know, he's able to, from this right side, give us an idea what that side looks like. Well, I'm not able to do that, but I'm able to ask that side what that side's like. So that's our goal, is to learn from them.
We've got other questions. Like, do the spirits seem to recognize that they are there? Are they all independent and don't notice each other? What is really taking place? We'll discuss that and more when we return. You're listening to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Darkness Radio.
Do you experience stress? Do you have anxiety? Do you have chronic pain? Do you have trouble sleeping at least once a week? You know you're not alone. Many of us do. I know I do. I've got all four of them. I've told you about it many, many times, but I'll tell you, as I have many times before, everything hurts except for the tip of this pinky on my left hand. I'm showing it to you right now. I know you can't see it because it's radio, but everything hurts. My neck, my back, my knees, my elbows, my shoulders, my everything. I've got arthritis. I've got herniated and bulging discs in my neck and back. I've got torn ligaments. I've got knees that need to be replaced. You name it, I've got it. So that means I need help. I need help with pain relief. I need help with the anxiety that comes with pain relief, because you know that every once in a while you just want to crawl out of your skin, because you know that there's that much pain that you just can't take it anymore, and you don't know how to handle it. And I do have trouble sleeping because of that pain. And there's only so many pills that you can take. There's only so much you can do. There's only so many clinics you can go to. There's only so much you can do to try and get out of that pain. I was searching for anything that would help. And then I discovered Feels. What is Feels, you may ask yourself? Well, Feels is premium CBD delivered directly to your doorstep. And what does Feels do? Well, Feels naturally helps reduce stress, anxiety, pain, and sleeplessness. And I'll tell you, Feels has helped quite a bit with that pain. And a lot of people have emailed me, and thank you for emailing me. Continue to email me, because I'll continue to encourage you. That Feels is not that typical pill that they give you when you go to the pain clinic. It's not an opioid. It's CBD. It's all natural. It's like taking ibuprofen. It doesn't give you that loginess. It doesn't give you that hangover. It's like taking ibuprofen. You place a few drops of Feels under your tongue and you feel the difference within minutes. The thing to remember about CBD is that you got to find your right dose. You got to get there, and every dose is different. Me, I take a dropper full in the morning, and then I take a dropper full in the evening, and it gets me to the point where it eases that pain so that I can sleep, so that I can get through my day, so I can sit here and I can do these podcasts with you, and I can function during the day, and I can sleep well at night. Leave some room to experiment over the course of a week or so. You may need to take more or less to get the effects that you're after. Now, although I'm available and I can help you, the real support comes from the folks at Feels, and they're great about getting to you and answering your questions, because I don't have all the answers. Even though I've been using Feels for quite a while, I kind of got the hang of it, but the folks at Feels, they're the experts. If you are new to CBDs, Feels offers a free CBD hotline to help guide you through your personal experience, and they are wonderful. They're there for you all the time, and they have the answers. They can help you on your program with Feels and help you get to the point where you are feeling better. Feel better naturally with Feels. They work naturally to help you feel better. Again, there's no high, there's no hangover or addiction with CBD. You just simply feel better when you're using Feels. You can join the Feels community to get Feels delivered directly to your door every month. That's what's great about Feels. Join the Feels community and it keeps coming to your doorstep. You'll save money on every order and you can pause or cancel at any time. Although, again, I've said it to you every week. I don't know why you'd want to stop getting Feels. Once you start feeling better, by gosh, you're not going to want to stop. But hey, if you want to, it's your prerogative. You can stop or pause or cancel at any time. Feels has me feeling my best every day, and it can help you too. Become a member today by going to feels.com/darkness, and you'll get 50% off your first order with free shipping. That's feals.com/darkness to become a member and get 50% automatically taken off your first order with free shipping. Feels.com/darkness. One more time, feals.com/darkness to become a member and get 50% automatically taken off your first order with free shipping. Do yourself a favor. Take away your stress. Take away your anxiety. Get out of chronic pain. Start sleeping, for God's sakes. Do yourself that favor. Start treating yourself instead of beating yourself up. Go to feels.com/darkness today. Become a member. Get 50% automatically taken off your first order with free shipping. Do it today.
We're back. This is Darkness Radio, The Cabin on Route 360. We're talking with Ryan and Rihanna Jones, Dennis Estlock. We're discussing the strange phenomenon and unusual history and haunting of this location. Do you make this available for people to come visit regularly? Is this something that's open to the public if they connect through you?
Yes, sir.
Any All right, we've got a... Go ahead.
I say anytime a team wants to come out here investigate, you know, we're open. We open up both houses, the cabin and the brick house, and we have 7.2 acres of woods behind the structures to investigate as well.
Well, we've got a link up for your site on today's program so people can find it a little bit more easily. Let's dive into more of the paranormal stories that have taken place there. And I think one of the questions I asked was, do these spirits seem to know that each other is there? And Dennis, maybe you're more adept at answering that question, or are they all kind of laying in their own time-locked area?
Some of them are aware of the others, and I think some of them aren't. So we've spoke mainly about the spirits that are in the Brick Rancher, but there are also several that reside or occupy the log cabin. One of the stories that we got was from a young lady that had a business at one point in the log cabin, and her story started out at 4 a.m. She felt compelled to go to the log cabin. She didn't know why. She had called her best friend, told her, hey, I'm in kind of a dark place. I'm going to the cabin to, quote unquote, get my shit together. And then she stole connection with her best friend via phone, wouldn't answer text or calls. Her best friend had the presence of mind to call authorities for a welfare check. This young lady said that while she was in the log cabin, she said the very strange thing about it was there was no sense of time or emotion. She just was. And at some point, she got up, walked past the kitchen sink, headed towards the bathroom, grabbed a large butcher knife, slit both of her wrists, and stood in the mirror in the bathroom and watched the blood drain out of her wrists. Then walked back to what was her office space, sat in her desk, and hung her arms over the arms of her office chair and just sat there. She said, at some point, I remember standing over here by the fireplace hearth, which is about 6, maybe 8 feet away. And she said, there was an old man and an older woman standing beside me. And she said, again, there was no sense of emotion or time or anything. She said, I just was, and they just were. But at some point, the old man turned and looked at me and said, you know, it's not your time. You're not ready, and you have to go back. She said, the next thing I remember is a brief conversation with paramedics and waking up 2 days later in the hospital. And I asked her, had you ever had suicidal ideologies before? And she said, no, I had no reason for that action. She said, my relationship was going very good. Business was very good. Monetarily, I was doing good. I was in good health. There was no reason for me to have done that, but I did. So, and, you know, the old man and the old woman that she referenced standing beside her, I truly believe, obviously, know of each other. I've since encountered the old man. I saw him as a full apparition that was strong enough and clear enough and solid enough. I spent the night out there one night. We do a lot of charity events there. And we were doing a Toys for Tots charity drive. End of the night was like 2 a.m. I was exhausted. I threw a sleeping bag in the loft upstairs. And I woke up to an old man 3 or 4 feet away from me, just standing over me, staring at me. I knew the doors were deadbolted. I knew I was in the house alone. But having just woke up, I rolled over and reached for my sidearm. And in that instant, he disappeared. My description of him, without having told her that I had seen him, and her description of the old man, we each told Ryan without the other telling each other what we saw, and our descriptions matched. As far as in the Brick Rancher, I believe the spirits know each other is there because we've heard multiple voices talking to each other when it's not the living talking. We have EVPs of multiple voices holding a conversation and referencing us, well, referencing, quote-unquote, them. So I do believe there are some of each. It's an absolutely fascinating location as far as the paranormal world itself goes and the supernatural world itself. And, you know, Ryan alluded to the 7.2 acres that we have. It's all on battlefields from the Battles of Bethesda Church. And we've had numerous sightings reported to us, and I've seen myself several times full-bodied apparitions of what appears to be soldiers in the woods. Numerous EVPs back there of what we believe to be soldiers communicating with each other through whistles. So, you know, we do believe that they're aware that each other is there, but there's so many layers of time on this property that we don't know if the different layers and the different time frames can see each other, or if it's so many from each time frame that's communicating with each other, but not to the different layer, you know?
That's kind of the conundrum we're always in, trying to understand exactly what's going on and who's aware of what and what is there. Do any of these spirits ever seem to discern for you what this darker force might be?
We've had EVPs where the question will be asked directly to, you know, can you tell us your name? And we've gotten... The one that stands out the most to me, and we had two ladies that were there with us one night that are in this area anyway, fairly well known as being mediums, and they do connections and readings for folks. They left immediately after the response was captured on recording, but the response was Beelzebub. It was rather interesting that, you know, and they themselves felt uncomfortable from the beginning. But once we picked that EVP up of a response to what's your name, and we got the response back of Beelzebub, they were done. I mean, they didn't even say goodbye to anybody. They just left.
So Beelzebub, I mean, it's calling itself out in quite a radical, powerful name. I mean, do you think that's a scare tactic of this entity to just try to unnerve the people? Or do you think that this really is a form of demonic? And Ryan, why don't we start with you? I know you may not be as sensitive as Dennis, but, you know, throwing out a big title like that seems like you would be in the middle of a hell house.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that it's just a scare tactic. I don't think it's really, honestly, I don't think it's really Beelzebub in the basement. I think we had a team come out there named Twisted Paranormal Society, and they got, I think it came through, I think it called itself Satan or the devil. Was it Satan, Dennis, or was it the devil?
No, it was Satan, and it was a fairly clear, loud EVP that came back when they asked the name, and it came back as Satan.
Yeah, I don't think Satan's hanging out in the basement of a brick rancher. I could be wrong about that, but I think it's more, like you said, more of a scare tactic trying to maybe scare people off from what they're doing.
With all of the darkness on this land, so much death and violent actions and war, it seems like the perfect intersection for just really high strangeness. Are there cyclical times when you seem to see that it's amped up more during the morning, afternoon, evening hours, fall, winter, spring, summer, any kind of telltale signs to you at all for that?
I mean, I haven't noticed any. I haven't noticed any much at all. I think they just show up when they want, and we hardly ever come here without getting some kind of evidence. I don't want to say never, because there are days when it's slow, but when we have investigations out here, we usually get something.
So it's just something that's always there. You're just always kind of able to make that kind of connection.
Yeah, well, there may be more like during a full moon or something, or sure, maybe after a rainstorm where there's energy in the air. But, you know, for the most part, yeah, it's pretty much constant.
Okay, is there... do you notice, though, that when you're communicating with one set of spirits, the others are not as powerful? Or does it seem like, you know, you could reach out to ghosts from many different eras all in the same evening, all in the same investigation?
Well, I think, like, when the brick house is active, the cabin may not be so active. Or it's almost like they take turns. Like, if the cabin's super active, the brick house may be pretty much, pardon the pun, but dead. And then if there's activity in the woods, the cabin and the brick house may not be as active. So I don't know if they're sharing energy or what, but it's hardly ever a time when all of them are all active at the same time, or all really active at the same time.
When you specifically go in and address the specific spirits, do they seem to respond accordingly? Like they're trying to make that connection with you?
When I try to make, I try to address the spirits, I usually just get a bunch of random EVPs that don't really make sense to what my questions are. But that might be because I don't have that connection like someone like Dennis might have. I still get, I got a lot of good EVPs, but they're very clear. It's just, they're not really answering the questions I'm asking.
All right. What all do you, with this type of activity, and I know you're not interested in necessarily sending them or helping them to cross over as you're continuing to study and experience these aspects of the paranormal, what is your end game with this? I mean, what is it that you really hope, and what is enough research? And maybe it could start with you, Ryan, and then Dennis, have you fold in if you have some thoughts on that.
Well, as far as my end game, I just love learning about the paranormal. And I think that this house has, this land has so many different spirits. We haven't even really scratched the surface of what's out there. Every time I get an EVP, it's a different voice coming through. And we want to use these houses as a way to teach people about the paranormal. That's why we have all these charity events out here. These public investigations is to bring people in and teach them the right way to investigate or how to respect the paranormal. And we really want people to learn about the history of this land and just give people an opportunity to experience a paranormal investigation for themselves. And at the same time, we like the fact that we can give back to the community. We've raised money for cancer patients. We've, like Dennis said, we've had three Toys for Tots events out here. We've raised money for the American Heart Association, different historical locations around here. Pretty much if you have, like our last investigation before this pandemic hit, we raised like maybe, I think, $2,500 for the MS fund. So, I mean, if you have a charity you want to support, you know, give us a call and we will set up an investigation for you guys, and we'll give all the money we raise to that particular organization. So it's about the paranormal, but it's also about giving back to the community and doing what we can to help out. Because we're lucky enough to have these two houses and the woods. We want to use it for good, you know?
Rihanna, let me ask you, out of curiosity, knowing that the spirit of this little girl, a girl very close to your age, still lingers there, what concerns does that create for you?
I just see how everything else happened, where she was murdered and stuff. And I kind of think, like, what if something took over the brother and made that happen? So I think me being in a situation like that, like, what if something happens to somebody around me, and then it's like, you know, I'm the closest person there to that age, and they kind of, like, see that in me? Like, that's my main concern, but I feel a little bit of a connection to her just with our age, especially when I first started coming here, because she passed away when she was 12, I believe, and I first started coming here around when I was, like, 12. So I did feel connected to her in a way, even if I didn't know the full story.
Do you have, then going forward with these type of investigations, do you feel that you have this kind of connection with her spirit then, Rihanna?
Yeah, I do. I feel like, I don't know, I feel like she's around kind of. And I feel like I'm somebody that she could, like, recognize and probably feel more calm. Because I know if it were me in that situation, I know I'd be a spirit, but still. Like, if you're me in a situation like that and you have all this, like, negative energy around you, that would be really scary for just, like, a young girl to be around all that. So,
right.
Yeah. I do feel
more. Yeah, that's and Ryan, do you ever have concerns because of that kind of connection that your daughter has with this spirit? Or do you think there's no real inherent danger to that?
Well, like I said before, I don't take her into the brick house anymore. Because when we first started investigating, I was fairly new to investigating myself. I'd been doing it for maybe 2 years, and I didn't know what was in there. So once I realized what was actually in there, that's when I was like, well, we're not going to let you come in there anymore. Cause we didn't have anything really happen until, I guess when, Dennis got affected by it on New Year's Eve a couple of years ago.
Party.
Yes. New Year's Eve. I think it was 2018 or something like that.
I remember one time we were in the brick house and we had a video going, we were going downstairs into the basement. This is when, this was like a few years ago though. We're going downstairs into the basement. And then, I don't know if we have this video anymore, but you can see an orb kind of following me down the stairs. coming up behind me.
That was when Transcend was there. Yeah.
Wow. So it's like the energy is actually there following you, being around, and you're, mm-hmm. you're capturing that evidence. That's exciting. But if you've got something that is dark in that house, masquerading as other things, what type of things do you do? And I know I just have to ask this because I know the listeners are going to be all over me. What kind of things do you do to protect yourself and make sure that you are not vulnerable?
Well, I usually say a prayer before I go in there, for a prayer for protection before I walk in. And then, I'll say it with Rihanna. But then when I leave, I tell whoever is there not to follow me. And they usually, I've never had anything follow me home or anything like that. Or even really affect me at all in that house.
All right, so it's basically like a prayer and that kind of situation to just kind of, I don't want to say control it, but to protect yourselves and isolate any kind of bizarre incidents that take place there.
Yeah. Yeah, I turn them a condom on.
Okay. Has anybody investigating there ever been hurt physically or long-term, even emotionally, because of the power of what's going on there?
We've had people get sick from the house. One girl said she had to go to the hospital after investigating the house. But I'm not sure if that was just from a previous problem and she happened to just be at the house the night before. But it's more mental. The spirit messes with your mind. He'll find the weakest one in the group and he'll try to get into your head. And that's happened on numerous occasions.
And when has it ever turned violent where, you said that you felt that effect as an investigator there ever done something unexpected or violent towards another person because of that influence?
Well, Dennis has a story. He can tell you about that.
Yeah. So Ryan alluded to the, New Year's Eve party that we had, and it was, we were all hanging out in the log cabin. We had put a TV up so we can throw a free air antenna up, watch the ball drop at Times Square. It had music going. A couple of the team members and friends had their kids there that anywhere from, 12 to 15 or so, I guess, age-wise. They're all dancing and having a great time. I had been over in the Rick Rancher earlier investigating and seeing what responses I can get. And generally, because we do have 7 acres of just unrestrained woods, we know we have fox. There's possibility of wolf back there. We don't know what wildlife is back there. So I generally carry a sidearm back there just for protection. And I was sitting in the corner on this New Year's Eve while everybody else is dancing and having a good time. I'm sitting back drinking my coffee and just relaxing and watching everybody. And then I started getting a little more and more somber, and then I got angry. And then I had visions in my head of just drawing my weapon and starting to shoot everybody in the room. And I knew at that moment I had an issue. So I went next door to the Brick Rancher and I unloaded on the energy that's there, just verbally, asking my spirit guides to come forth and protect me, and asking my saints to come forth and protect me, and ordering it that it's not allowed to interact with my mind, my thoughts, my emotions, and things like that. And the house literally growled at me. So it like Ryan said, it goes more after the emotional aspect of individuals. The energy that's there, you're not going to have plates flying around the house and, heads spinning, shooting out green pea soup. You're going to catch people like the investigator that Ryan mentioned earlier that had said he had never felt the desire to physically harm his family members, but in that instant, he wanted to just smash him in the face. That's the way that this energy plays.
Is that a concern then for you, Ryan? And then I'll come back to you, Dennis, to know that, you know, Dennis has a sidearm. He's there, and this thing is influencing him enough that it's making him want to, even though he's been able to control it to this point. Are you ever worried that there may be a day that he just is a little more tired than usual, maybe a little less protected, and something gets through to him and something unleashes?
Well, he knows not to come to this house with emotional baggage. There has been times where we'll have investigations out here and he'll be like, you know what? I'm just not feeling it today. There's something going on. I have, like, you know, personal stuff going on. I can't go into the brick house because he knows it'll affect him, but he's one of the strongest persons I know. So it'll take a lot. Since he knows what he's dealing with now, he knows how to protect himself. I'm more worried about the people who come in off the street during a public investigation. You go into the brick house, and we tell them every time they come out, like, look, this is what's going on. You know, we tell them exactly what happens, and they look, we need to protect yourself. If you feel like you have anything going on in your life, and, you know, if you're angry about anything, if you're sad about something, let us know. We don't think it's a good idea for you to go in there because it can attach. It'll attack that. And sometimes people don't.
Go
ahead, Dennis.
During our presentation, you know, before we do the public investigations and whatnot, during our presentation of the history and activity and everything else, one of the statements that we make every single time is we tell the guests that those that you came with, pay close attention to them. You know them far better than we do. If they're starting to act out of character, draw our attention to it. Bring it to us so we can get them out of the structure immediately. You know, if you look at Jane and she's usually happy-go-lucky and you ask her a question and she snaps your head off, you know that's out of character for her. We need to get her removed from there right then. So, you know, we take as much precaution as we can, but you also have to keep in mind that we're dealing with full-grown adults that are going to make their own decisions. So we're proactive, but we're also prepared to be reactive. I've always got my kit with me for cleansings and blessings. I have blessed metals from Reverend Mother. So, you know, we always are trying to protect the guests, but we also want to learn what's there and what can it do.
Is there any other aspect of the story, any other strange bits you want to share with us before we wrap up today? I mean, it's a fascinating story, a crazy history, and a power line that seems so evasive that it borders dangerous. But what is your overall take? And, you know, maybe I'll start and work my way through the list. Rihanna, what is your take on this property? And is there any other story that you want to share with us before we say goodbye?
I think that it's really powerful. I think that they're kind of used to me being here, though, so it doesn't, like, affect me too much. I think they know who I am, and they respect me to a certain extent, so I do enjoy it here. I don't have much more stories, I don't think, but the ones that I do have, like hearing stuff in the woods and, like, just door slamming and stuff, I've tried to find any possible explanation that I can for it, and I just can't, like, I try to debunk it as well as I can, but I cannot. But yeah, as we said, the cabin is open for investigations and stuff. And Dave, if you're ever in Virginia and you want to come down here, we're inviting you as well. If you ever want to come in and investigate.
I mean, it's certainly fascinating and something I would consider doing. But boy, if I got to leave my mental baggage behind before I can go in that door, I don't know if I'll ever get in there. That's a real concern. Now, Ryan, what about you? Any other last aspects of the house? Any other stories you want to share with us before we say goodbye?
Well, I mean, there are two, like, the brick house is what it is. The log cabin is where we do, where we spend most of our time. And this is a very welcoming, welcoming location. It's not as dark as the, not definitely not as dark as the brick house. So when you come out here, it's, it's like a totally different, location. Still very haunted, but definitely more, welcoming and inviting. This is where we do, this is where we have most of our get togethers and stuff, or where we, meet up before investigations and stuff like that. I will tell you a story though. We had a team, booked the cabin for the whole weekend. It was Friday through Sunday, paid $400. They were from New Hampshire. They drove down 9 hours. Dennis met them. They had dinner. Dennis met them, gave them the tour of the location. And about an hour after he left them, after Dennis left the location, with one of the leaders called him up and said, "Hey, we're leaving. We're done. Don't worry about paying us back. We don't want a refund. We're heading back to New Hampshire right now, tonight." Apparently, whatever happened to them in this house scared them so bad that they felt the need to leave after an hour.
That powerful, that terrifying. Were they ever forthcoming with the information of what took place?
Well, I host a paranormal podcast called The Freaking Awesome Show. And I had them on my show. And basically, they told us, that when they first started getting stuff together, they started like bickering. And one of the guys said he went upstairs and in the loft area of the cabin, he said he saw what looked like a half man, half goat figure upstairs in the loft. Another one of the investigators said he went to use the bathroom in the woods and ended up on the gravel access road beside the house. And he said he was surrounded by men in robes carrying torches. I mean, it's stuff I've never experienced myself out here, but they are so adamant. And these people have been investigating again for like 30 years. There's not like a team that happened to stumble upon the cabin and got scared of their own shadow. They've been at Hinsdale. They've been to, Bobby Mackey's, all the major locations they've filmed out there or have investigated out there. Like they said, this is probably the most messed up places that they've ever been to. We've had, Sean Austin and Dave Spinks, come out here. Sean Austin from Demon Files and what's the name of that other show that he's on? They both come out here and sorry, I had a brain fart. And they said this is probably one of their top five paranormal locations that they've ever been to. And Dennis can tell you what happened to Sean in the basement of the brick house.
All right, let me hear about it, Dennis.
By all means. So I met Dave and Sean out there to give them the tour, give them the history and everything. They were going to spend the weekend, just the two of them. We walked into the basement, and there was a wolf spider larger than a cigarette pack on the wall. And Dave kind of smiled and tapped Sean and goes, "Hey, buddy, look what's on the wall." Now, Sean is terrified of spiders. That is like one of his biggest no-nos. He turned around and looked at it and, he immediately goes into a tirade. "Oh, hell no, I don't do spiders." He's like, "I will F with demons, but I don't do spiders." Of course, Dave, these two are both very jocular with each other. And Dave's like, "Well, guess where you'll be spending some time by yourself?" Well, Friday night, they set up wireless DVR system. I hung out with him all night Friday night. Dave was being a little provoking in the log cabin and just instantly doubled over and ran out the front door and started dry heaving. He said it felt like something punched him in the gut that was like a mule kick, which was out of the ordinary, but nothing there anymore is kind of unexpected. So then Saturday night, I left him there by himself. Sean went to the basement by himself and was doing a live Periscope feed. So he had his cell phone in one hand, an SLS camera in the other hand. He said at one point it felt like Dave had walked up behind him. He said he felt an energy come up behind him. He turned over his left shoulder to look. Dave is looking at him on the DVR from the log cabin and sees.
Okay. Did I lose you? Uh-oh. Dennis suddenly vanishes mid-story on us. Dennis, are you there? Ryan, are you still with us?
I'm still here.
You know, should I be concerned that your friend's in the middle of telling us a story and then mystically vanishes on us?
I mean, I hope not, man. That's right. Hopefully he'll call back. But I think what he was trying to say was Sean was in the basement and of the brick house, and there was a he was looking at the SLS camera. And this entity on the screen that was up was, you know, standing on two legs. Then all of a sudden it morphed into what looks like a giant spider on the SLS camera. So
gotcha.
Pretty much he was, yeah, just standing up. Then he got pretty much gone on all fours and it looked like a giant spider trying to scare Sean, because he had mentioned that he was scared of spiders. So, I mean, it's this house, you know, all the structures, you know, it's definitely a lot of stuff here.
Well, I can't thank you enough, Rihanna, for reaching out to me and sharing the story, and Ryan for coming and for bringing your friend Dennis, who's had these wild experiences. We appreciate you coming forward and being a part of our expanded Parashare episode. We wish you a lot of luck, and who knows, if our paths cross in the future, travel opens up, maybe we'll get a chance to visit the cabin on Route 360.
Thank you.
That's it for today. You got it. We'll be back tomorrow. Bill Burns, our guest, Tesla, Edison, communicating with the other side right here on Darkness Radio.